From NPR and The Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It's Hispanic Heritage Month, but who exactly does this yearly commemoration serve, and to what end?
The only thing that's allowed in Arizona during Latino Heritage Month are guacamole and tequila popper special.
Another conversation in our series, Somos, We Are. And we introduce you to the godfathers of the alternative comics movement, Los Bros Hernandez.
That's why it's a punk rock comic, not because we're trying to be wild or outrageous or, you know, shock people or whatever. It was more just being honest and not listening to other people.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. Mexican-American women rodeo riders competing at Mexico's National Charro Championships. How about some raw poetry from the Brooklyn Projects? Or some modernist architecture in post-revolutionary Cuba? And the lives of the masked men wrestling in the rings of Mexican lucha libre. These are all subjects for documentaries featured in the third season of Voces, a Latino arts and culture documentary showcase on PBS. The series airs over the next 4 weeks. And joining me from the NPR studios in D.C. is Sandy Víquez-Pedlo. She is the executive director of Latino Public Broadcasting, and she joins us to talk about the series and this year's featured documentaries. Welcome to Latino USA, Sandy.
Thank you, Maria.
This is the first time that Voces will actually be seen at the same time on all public television stations around the country. It's a really big milestone for Latino Public Broadcasting and for Voces, Sandy.
Absolutely. You know, and we're extremely pleased that they recognize the enormous impact and the significant contributions of Latino writers, filmmakers, artists, and many others on our vast American cultural landscape.
Let's start with the film Escaramuza, Riding from the Heart. So for people who are like, what are you talking about? What's a charriada and what's an escaramuza?
Escaramuza really alludes to the women of the Mexican Revolution that would ride out as decoys, kicking up clouds with their horses and luring the enemy into an ambush from behind. This has been translated into the charros of Mexican Americans, and las acelias, who are these first-generation Mexican Americans, are trying to keep this tradition alive in the U.S. And it just takes a lot on their part to compete, but they want to represent California and the U.S. in Mexico at the National Charro Championship. So it's really about retaining their cultural Mexican-American heritage and yet being very American.
All right. And then from there, the next wonderful film is called Tales of Masked Men. This is a story of luchadores who are part of Lucha Libre. For people who are like, what are you talking about? What is Lucha Libre? What's this film about?
The drama and theater and mystery around Lucha Libre, which are the masked men. These masked men become characters, heroes, villains. But at the end, one generation passes on the mask to the son, keeping that character alive, which is very unusual for me. So it's not just wrestling. It really is the art of lucha libre through a lot of mystery and drama. It's a fascinating look. And the story is told through three masked men that tell us about their challenges and their triumphs and why lucha libre is growing in importance, not only in Mexico where it started, but around the world.
And then there's something that couldn't be more different than that. The movie is called Lemon. It looks into the life of New York poet and playwright Lemon Anderson, who is part Puerto Rican, who is part of Deaf Poetry Jam on Broadway. What's the story about Lemon?
Lemon is a dropout, a three-time felon, but he's also a poet and a Tony winner performance artist. He came out of the projects, couldn't find meaning in his life, so he turns to his life experiences and to his writing to tell us what it is growing up in the hood. And he eventually gets out of the hood and becomes this well-known performance artist who's really inspiring a whole generation of young kids.
What is the importance of these different voices of Latino filmmakers and Latino topics airing on a network like PBS, which has the mission to represent diverse voices?
It has to be organizations such as LPB and other Latino organizations that can open the doors for Latino stories and Latino talent. If we don't do it, nobody else will, and these stories need to be seen, need to be understood by the American public.
Thank you for all the work that you do, and thank you for bringing voices to PBS this year.
Thank you, Maria.
Sandy Víquez-Pedlo is the executive director of LPB, or Latino Public Broadcasting. She joined us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. And for news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter, where we are LatinoUSA. That's all one word. And we're back in 30 segundos. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. So it's that time of the year again, Hispanic Heritage Month. This month is meant to celebrate and recognize the contributions that Latinos have made to U.S. culture and society. But for some, it feels like a way to sanitize Latino history in the United States or just an excuse to market to Latinos. So today we're taking up the uses of Hispanic Heritage Month as part of the series we call Somos, We Are, Conversations About Latino Identity, Present and Future. Joining us today is Arlene Davila. Arlene Davila is a professor of anthropology, social and cultural analysis at New York University and the author of several books on the marketing of Latino culture and to Latinos. And from California, Lalo Alcaraz. He is a cartoonist and a humorist. You may know him from his website, pocho.com. He also hosts the Pocho Hour of Power weekly on KPFK Radio. He joins us from his office in Los Angeles, California. Welcome back, Lalo, to Latino USA.
Thank you.
And welcome back to you, Arlene.
Thanks.
So when Hispanic Heritage Month comes around, Arlene, let's start with you. Are you like, oh, my God, here we go. It's going to be major marketing. Or are you like, okay, fine, we're going to have some great documentary series. We're going to see interesting things highlighted. What goes on for you immediately?
I've learned to see it as what it is, which is this huge marketing tool, right? So this is the time of the year when corporations, institutions everywhere carve a little bit of their budget to do something Latino, right? But, you know, it's what it is, right? It's this kind of marketing celebration. So more often than not, right, it becomes translated to things that make us feel good, like exhibitions or talks. Like, they always want me to talk about, like, Latino history, which is really significant because it points to what we usually don't get during the year, right? Because what happens is that within the month, we go back to normal. And going back to normal, as you know, is going back to a state where it's okay to ignore Latinos, to not teach Latino history, and to not know.
All right. And what about for you, Lalo? I mean, I'm sure as a comic and as a cartoonist, you're just like, oh, my God, there's a lot to make fun of here, right? I mean, on your website, pocho.com, you've been running a series called Unsung Heroes of Hispanic Heritage Month, and you describe it as highlighting ordinary people living ordinary lives who somehow make important contributions to Latino history. But none of the people featured are of Latino descent. So what's the joke here?
Well, I know that the Kennedy Center does not celebrate Latinos during its Kennedy Center Honors, which they announce around the middle of September, which the 12th this year. And the director of the Kennedy Center, after telling a Latino to go do something to himself that I can't repeat on the radio, he justified his non-racism by saying, I received the Aztec Order of the Eagle Medal from Mexico. This award kind of came from those honoring, you know, every gringo they could find. And so we decided to honor every gringo we could find, like the developer of Corinthian leather, who brought such fame to Ricardo Montalban and things like that. These are the unsung heroes of ridiculous Hispanic Heritage Month honors.
I have to say that I loved seeing the series because it really brings up the whole this ingenious element to this holiday, you know, which I was actually thinking like, you know, this is election year, right? And we just had this string of anti-immigration legislation just passed. And then we have the candidates that are totally tiptoeing around things Latino and courting Latinos and how to do so without alienating their base constituencies, you know? And then we have like Heritage Month. It's sort of more than other years, the kind of this ingenuousness of the whole event.
It is a very mixed message in the United States today towards Latinos. We love you. We don't like you so much. For people who are just walking around saying, oh my God, this is crazy. What part of it drives you the craziest, Arlene?
Well, I actually, you know, more than drives me crazy, I was actually thinking of Lalo's idea of the unsung Latinos, right? And I was thinking, you know, who are the unsung Latinos that you know, we should be really talking about this season, you know? And I'm really thinking, you know, of people like the Libro Traficantes, for instance, right?
The so let's just make clear what Libro Traficante and who the Libro Traficantes are. It's very easy. If you think of the term narco traficante, and everybody knows what that is, so replace narco with libro. You are a libro traficante means that you are a book smuggler.
And I think that that's such a wonderful way of celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month because what this, you know, group, you know, what they're doing is basically highlighting the incredible persecution of Mexican-American history and culture and literature in Arizona, right? And basically turning it back into a festival of celebration and recognition and community.
So what is the thing that when you see Hispanic Heritage Month just kind of makes you cringe, Lalo?
Being online all the time is I am. I'm starting to enjoy pictures of gringos with sombreros and big fake mustaches. I know that's not a product, but people tend to put on large hats and fake facial hair. And I think it's just hilarious how, I mean, on one hand, yeah, it kind of, you know, cheapens actual symbols. But on the other hand, it's kind of subversive. I mean, the taco is an American staple and, you know, salsa, it's a cliche. It outsells ketchup. But, you know, it is true. And it does kind of soften the stark divide a little bit. The only thing that's allowed in Arizona during Latino Heritage Month are guacamole and tequila popper special.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for helping us understand this year's Hispanic Heritage Month. Arlene Davila.
Thanks, Maria.
And to you in California, Lalo Alcaraz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Maria.
Lalo Alcaraz is a cartoonist and humorist. He joined us from his offices in Los Angeles, California. And Arlene Davila is a professor of anthropology, social and cultural analysis at New York University. She was with us here at the NPR studios in New York. So do you have a topic that you would like us to talk about in terms of Somos and Latino identity? Let us know on our website at latinousa.org. Centro de Salud La Fe is one of the most celebrated institutions in El Paso, Texas. It started out as a one-room health clinic in Segundo Barrio, one of the city's oldest and roughest neighborhoods. Its current director, Salvador Valcorta, grew up in Segundo Barrio at a time when opportunities were limited and young people faced dead-end futures. As part of our year-long series about Latinos and health, reporter Monica Ortiz Uribe has this profile of Salvador Valcorta and Centro de Salud La Fe.
People say Segundo Barrio in El Paso is one of the last true neighborhoods in the city. Here, purple lowriders pump cumbias from their stereos. Cholos ride kitty bikes down the street, and ladies carrying mesh market bags say good afternoon in Spanish. This is where Salvador Valcorta was born. As he tells it, Segundo Barrio also had a dark side.
Segundo had the notoriety of being the most gang-infested area of town.
It's also listed by the U.S. Census as one of the poorest zip codes in the country. Children growing up here were exposed to violence and drugs. Things got so bad that in 1967, a group of mothers and grandmothers chose to take action. They met in tenements with conditions so deplorable, Valcorta says they called them the Seven Hells.
The mothers and the abuelitas they became organizers and they became the leaders in wanting a better life for their children.
These women decided if they wanted a healthier community, they'd start with actual physical well-being. And so began Centro de Salud La Fe.
And so we were born in a one-room apartment with them recruiting doctors to come in and provide volunteer services at night. You know, they take care of you for day-to-day ailments.
Balcorta tells this story from a spacious second-floor office just a block from where the Seven Hells tenement used to stand. He sits with a recently injured leg propped up on a chair. A black eagle tattoo peeks out from his upper calf, and he wears a rosary around his neck.
I was involved in La Fe from the very start. I would volunteer passing out flyers, trying to get people to sign petitions. The neighborhood abuelitas and mothers started to call me El Niño Militante, the child militant, because I began as an activist at 13 years old.
Balcorta was one of the lucky few whose parents encouraged him to go to college. He got his diploma and as an adult worked for the El Paso City Health Department. Then one day, in 1992, the executive director position opened up at La Fe.
Some of the elders always wanted somebody from their own neighborhood, from their own barrio, to lead the organization.
Balcorta got the job. When he started, La Fe had a staff of 66 and a $3 million budget. Today, it has 500 employees and a budget 9 times its original sum. The main clinic sees 100 to 300 patients a day. La Fe also has one of the largest HIV treatment and education facilities in the Southwest. And under Balcorta's direction, La Fe expanded its definition of healthcare to include cultural enrichment and education. At the Culture and Technology Center, a Mexican musician teaches guitar to a small group of adult students. Across the hall, there's a class to help people pass the U.S. citizenship exam. And downstairs, teenagers are doing their homework in a computer lab. All these resources are free and open to the public.
My name is Jorge Centeno. I'm 25 years old. I just got out of the state penitentiary.
Centeno grew up in Segundo Barrio. He wears dark shades over a shaved head and has 3 dots tattooed on the corner of his eye that stand for Mi Vida Loca, My Crazy Life.
Thanks to La Fe Productions, you know, me ha sacado de la mala vida, de las pandillas, de las drogas, you know. Instead of being out there on the streets, you know, gang banging or using drugs, I come to La Fe Productions, you know, to record music and express what I feel, you know. You know, all the sadness, loneliness, you know, whatever I feel, you know, I express it in my lyrics, you know. Subo la radio mi troca, que se oiga
esa madre, que se oiga la. Nowadays, Segundo Barrio still struggles with unemployment and substandard housing, but crime has dropped dramatically. La Fe has 22 facilities around El Paso, including a preparatory school where children can get a bilingual education. Children here are now growing up to become school principals, city planners, and artists. Some are spread across the country, but others, like Salvador Balcorta, chose to stay and give back to the community that helped raise them. For Latino USA, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe in El Paso.
Coming up on Latino USA, their comics have featured the same cast of characters for 30 years as they age, have families, and even die.
It didn't even occur to us that we were doing something weird. We just thought we can write these types of characters.
Los Bros, Jaime and Gilbert Hernandez, comic book pioneers, next on Latino USA. Stay with us.
Que vas a superar. Calma y enfócate.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. These days, movie screens are filled with adaptations of comic book superheroes, The Dark Knight, the X-Men, Superman. But there's another side to comics. Some artists use the form to tell more personal stories, stories about ordinary people whose superpowers extend only to vivid memories and a peculiar point of view. Latino USA's senior producer Carolina Gonzalez takes us into their world, the world of Los Bros Hernandez.
It's Friday night at a teeny Brooklyn club called the Rock Shop, and a crowd of about 60 hovers near the stage. Two middle-aged guys in glasses step up.
Jaime Hernandez!
Gilbert and Jaime Hernandez proceed to do something you don't normally see in a rock club. They stand on the stage and draw, and the audience is rapt. It's because the comic book characters the Hernandez brothers are drawing with Sharpies on a big white pad are ones their fans have loved for 30 years.
Request.
Luba.
Luba. Oh, yeah. It's not enough paper.
When the comic book Love and Rockets first came out in 1982, it was unlike any that had come before. The brothers had been drawing since they were kids, encouraged by their comics-loving mother. But it wasn't until punk hit Southern California at the end of the 1970s that Gilbert and Jaime started breaking all comics rules. The brothers started going to shows with bands like X, The Bags, The Plugs, and The Ramones, full of raw energy even when they lacked musical finesse.
Punk was a big deal. When I discovered punk, I was like, oh boy, you can do stuff by yourself. And that kind of gave us the courage to do this comic. And without saying like, oh, they're not going to like my characters. Well, I didn't care.
I was able to just, you know, hunker down in my, you know, bedroom and look down and just do my comics as I wanted to do them. That's why it's a punk rock comic, not because we're trying to be wild or outrageous or, you know, shock people or whatever. It was more just being honest and not listening to other people because, oh, and the most important, believing in yourself.
The first few issues of Love and Rockets included the robots, aliens, and superheroes of your typical comic book. But these elements quickly faded, leaving stories that centered on Latino characters. Jaime's stories were about punk rockers and cholos near multicultural Los Angeles. Gilbert drew stories set in a Latin American town called Palomar, which many have compared to the Macondo in Gabriel Garcia Marquez novels.
That was just something we wanted to do, tell stories from a different point of view that weren't just about gangs and, I don't know, whatever other cliche and Latinos are portrayed in, you know, television and movies and stuff.
For Jaime, the girls he met at punk rock shows in the early 80s were more fantastic than any sci-fi he could dream up. So he drew them.
Sometimes I'd rather hang out with the women because I really liked that punk girl attitude, that I don't give a hoot thing, you know. And I just found that so appealing, and being friends, that stuff started to soak in and I started to put it in my characters.
There's an abundance of three-dimensional women characters in the brothers' work. There's Luba, the busty mayor of Palomar, armed with a hammer and mother to a dozen children by different partners. And there's Maggie and Hopi, the on-again-off-again couple, who start out as feisty punk girls and are currently a mechanic shop owner and a teacher. And the brothers are surprised that 30 years later, this is still considered a remarkable feat.
It didn't even occur to us that we were doing something weird or different, that much different. We just thought this was our strength. We can write these types of characters. And it really, most art comes out of some kind of indulgence. We just like drawing pretty women.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. It's for my buddy, Gary. She's like, wants to be just like you guys, so that's a gift for her.
Is that spelled?
The fans in line to get their book signed at the Rock Shop event were about evenly divided between men and women, a rare sight at comics events. Chloe Zetkoff, a 20-ish aspiring comics artist, brought a stack of books creased with well-loved handling.
every time I open, you know, one of these books, it's like visiting old friends again, and it's so nice to finally meet the two of you.
If not the biggest, that is one of the biggest compliments you could give me. That's, I just love that they can feel real to you. Then I did my job. You know?
30 years ago, I didn't know if I would think I would be here, but I was hoping I'd be here. You know, I was hoping we had something that would last and that people would follow us and allow us to do it. And I'm going to go another 30 years if they let me.
Over the course of 30 years, Gilbert and Jaime's characters have aged, had children, moved in and out of the U.S. Some have even died. But the stories just keep coming. For Latino USA, I'm Carolina Gonzalez.
And for more on Los Bros, go to our website, latinousa.org, for two exciting web-only extras. And for this week, that's Latino USA. If you have any comments or suggestions, please call our listener line at 646-571-1228. Yes, go old school. Pick up the phone. Dial 646-571-1228. Tell us your thoughts, tell us your name, and tell us where you're calling from. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Nadia Raymond, Andres Caballero, and Michael Jones. Additional production help from Michael Johnson and Manoli Weatherall and NPR Studios in New York. Latino USA is produced by the Futuro Media Group in Harlem. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is funded in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Our year-long look at Latinos in health is made possible by funding from Pfizer. With Pfizer Helpful Answers, a family of patient assistance programs for patients in need, at PfizerHelpfulAnswers.com.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at MacFound.org, and the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at MelvilleTrust.org. This is NPR.